When we look at the passage, resist not evil, we're apt to meet it head on and see it only as a command and miss the higher purpose. As a matter of fact, just 200 years ago, roughly, when old Paul Revere came down the countryside, there wasn't anybody who stopped him and said, "Well, look, Paul, it says in the Bible, resist not evil. Why are you coming around telling us to resist the British?" And there was nobody in England telling the British that their Bible said the very same words, and they were not to resist our antagonism to taxes. And so man has very blithely bypassed these words. Every new nation that forms itself resists those who had possessed it. And in a way, perhaps we can measure our progress that now, some 200 years later, we can even wonder if we did the right thing in the American Revolution. We can even wonder if there was not a better way. It would have seemed impossible to consider a better way at the time. Nobody would think it possible to win freedom without a sword. But we find in the 20th century someone did win freedom without a sword, proving that what we may have thought was impossible was very possible. It required a spiritual witness faithful to the spirit of his own being. When Gandhi proved you can win independence without a sword, he established the principle of resist not evil in the 20th century, a principle that had been overlooked as impractical, as if God would make an impractical recommendation to us. Now again, in our individual lives, we follow the same plan as we followed 200 years ago. We deny that which we do not agree with. We use the fist, the sword, the court of law, cunning to meet cunning, power to meet power, scheme to meet scheme. And then when we come to a passage that says, if someone takes our coat at the law, give them our cloak, we think surely somebody's pulling our leg. Suppose they took the deed to my house. Should I call them up and say, look, I have another house, and you missed that deed. Would you care for it? Always meeting these principles on the physical level, we fail to recognize that a different realm of activity has been opened up to us. A realm so marvelous, so unsuspected by the world which has walked by this principle, that it has never moved into the real new frontier, the spiritual frontier, the spiritual revolution. But we are beginning to taste that different kind of revolution. Not a material revolution of one nation against another, of one physical power against another physical power, a completely and totally different kind of revolution in which man, instead of fighting his neighbor, instead of fighting a dictator, fights himself. fights his own false sense of identity. He declares war upon himself, upon the person he is not. He refuses to resist the unreal universe and moves into the frontier of an invisible reality, ever near him, ever touching him, ever within him, ever waiting for his recognition. All in three little words: resist not evil. Man finally learns this is the call to develop his consciousness, to be lifted into that other realm where evil has no existence whatsoever, where there is no army that attacks, where there is no virus, where there is no fear, where there is no disease, where there is no death. And finally he sees there is such a realm. We experience glimpses of that realm. We learn to walk in it. We learn to partake of that which was here before the false veil of a human consciousness. We learn that we have been gifted with a life that did not begin in a womb, a life that will not end in a pine box. And we learn that the price we must pay to realize that life eternal is to lift the veil of that false consciousness which looks out and sees evil where it does not exist. We have a postal strike. I'm quite sure that hundreds of millions of people, if they had a postal strike throughout the world would decide that they'd be in poverty. Pension checks would stop. Banks would not be able to do international business. Everything that depends on the mails would stop in the human mind. And hardly anyone would stop to say, well, how does the post office affect God? Is God's work dependent on the mails? Is God dependent on the arm of flesh? Can spirit be bound by men of earth? And if at first your reaction to the strike would be, what am I going to do now? The checks I expect won't be in. You will find that in a sense you too have begun the resistance to evil, the reaction to the announcement that in some way inconveniences you or threatens you is resistance to evil. And the recognition of that evil as something you want to do something about sets up your wall of defense, desire for removal of that evil, and is indicative then of the divided consciousness which still rejects the idea that God is one. When Jesus gave us the enlightenment not to resist evil, he might have phrased it, God has not created evil. God has not created problems. Where then do these problems exist? He was lifting us out of the universe of the mind, out of the universe which is dominated by the mentality of man, out of the physical universe which is the mind made visible. He was lifting us out of the domination of that which is counterfeit, that which is not of God. He was advising us that when we did not resist evil, we would benefit. For in not resisting evil, we would discover there is a realm that yields a new insight, a new way of life, a realm that takes us and transforms us from the dying creature to the living Christ. He was revealing that there is a living realm where we stand now, where resistance to evil is totally unnecessary. He was giving us freedom on a silver platter. Every time we limit ourselves to what we believe is the truth, we might just as well try to pour the Pacific Ocean into a thimble. That's the same as trying to understand infinite wisdom with a finite human mind. And as long as we cling to this finite human mind, as long as we mentalize our life, we're going to see evil that must be resisted. And we're going to limit ourselves to the good, the evil, the duality of this world. Now, as you know, religion teaches that evil does exist. Religion teaches there is a hereafter. And if we can live in the goodness of our hearts, obeying certain commandments, we will be spared a good deal of the evil, and eventually in the hereafter, we will find a heaven. Science has a different kind of asininity to give us. Science says that we need power over power. Science recognizes the presence of evil. And science builds power to combat that evil. And so while religion and science are fighting the evil, trying to bring us the good, the Spirit of Christ is saying, you are wasting your time fighting and overcoming that which has no existence. The Spirit of Christ is saying, I in the midst of thee am greater than he that walks the earth. The Spirit of Christ is saying, it was I, in the enlightened consciousness of Hezekiah, who said, they have only the arm of flesh, but we have the Lord Almighty. Spirit says, it was I in the Garden of Gethsemane, who said to Peter, put up thy sword. Spirit says, it was I, in the enlightened consciousness of David, who went forth without a sword, without armor, knowing that I in the midst of him was mighty. Spirit says, I never see evil, for I walk in reality. Spirit says, rest in me. My yoke is easy. Spirit says to me, I am not bound by the things of this world. If I would come to you in the fullness of your being, there is no power on this earth that can prevent it. Only one. And that is the human belief that I am not here. But when we resist not evil, in the confidence that there is no evil to resist, then we stand like Hezekiah, like David, like Jesus, and we look out upon what appears to be the enemy with a secret. It takes a mind to direct a bullet to you. It takes a mind to direct a bomb to you. It takes a mind to cause you physical harm. And when you are in the awareness of the eye of your being, that eye of your being is the one power functioning in all that concerns you, so that it does not destroy your supposed enemy, but rather it destroys the influences working through the mind of your enemy. It destroys the beliefs and the thoughts that would be directed to the mind of your enemy to direct the bullet or the bomb or whatever force might appear to you. Always the eye, which is mightier than the sword, is the guardian angel of your supply, your health, your vision, your hearing, your body, your complete human experience, immune to the evil that the eye of your being knows is not there, is able to walk with grace through every untoward event that appears in the human experience of other people. Now we're going to suppose that you have a pension check that's due on the first of the month. We're going to suppose this postal strike continues beyond the first of the month. We'll even suppose that without that check, you have no food in the house and no money to spend. This would appear to be a great limitation, a catastrophe. Now let's look at the good side of it. Let's see if there is a good side of it. Once you start dwelling on the good side of it, you're going to find at least 10 reasons why it's just as well this way as the other. The bills that you cannot mail out and pay. The letters you won't have to write. New ways of doing things. Suddenly you find the jolt is making you think and get out of the rut of just being comfortable. You begin to see that you must never learn to depend on the outer world. Instead, we find that our false sense of security is being uprooted. It never was a true security. There is no security in matter. There is no security in persons. There is no security in things. The only security there is in the self, the spirit, the right identity. And then you find that although you have made some material sacrifices through a momentary inconvenience, what it does do for you far outnumbers the limitations it seems to cause. And then you discover that no power on this earth can prevent what is yours coming to you. You find that you're never separated from the one source, that your income does not depend on the government. It only appears that way. God is your supply. God is your substance. And God is not physical, God is not material, God is not visible. You learn the power of the Spirit to circumvent every physical appearance of this world. You find you can rest without anxieties, knowing that your supply never comes from the postman. It never comes from a federal bureau. And when these channels are closed, new channels open up, surprising channels. For spirit is never locked up. Now again, we come to giving our cloak. Surely, Jesus had something in mind that the world has failed to see. Suppose we drop the belief that there is a cloak to give, that someone could steal our coat. Suppose we learn from the baggage that there never was any coat or cloak or baggage. Now, how can you give the cloak if there isn't any? How can you give matter if there is no matter? How can matter be stolen if it doesn't exist? Your mind strives to understand that. But again, it is that very activity of the mind that Jesus is trying to unsettle, so that we will drop the belief in a material universe and place no value on our material concepts. Why? Because we have learned that matter is never external to our being. We have learned that material conditions are never external to our being. We have learned that there are no material conditions. He is lifting us out of the hypnosis, removing the onion skins of human thought. He is teaching us by jolting us into the awareness that there is only a spiritual universe. And the coat or cloak that you would cling to has no real existence. It must drop from your consciousness as a necessary possession. We are being told to let loose of the physical things of this world, the physical concepts. When Lazarus was raised from the tomb, he said, "Loose him and let him go." What we bind by our beliefs binds us. And what we loose by our beliefs looses us. When we loose Lazarus from the material concept, we're loosing the human race from the material concept. We're learning that there is nothing outside of my being. Nothing outside of I. And the reason we must learn that, even though it seems uncomfortable, somewhat unfamiliar, rather difficult to accept, is that our ultimate prize is resurrection. And by intervening between the reality of spirit with our mental beliefs and our outer human experience, we delay the experience of resurrection in such a way that the world is unable to rise above its many problems, its many blood-stained countries, its many helpless invalids. It's many agonizing, torturous moments of wondering where it's going and why. And yet all of this, you are told, is but a shadow in thought, so that you can rise through the shadows, recognizing the cosmic illusion as you go, resting in the invisible, present reality of spirit, and then be lifted out of the realm of opposites into a universe beyond the imagination of the human mind. Where every evil that we have accepted in our conditioned minds is conspicuously absent. Where there's no problem of health today or lack of health tomorrow. Where there is no evil to be considered. Where life is completely lived in a different way. And not in the hereafter of heaven, not by the overcoming of a power, but by the release from the human mind and its prison in the universal mind of man. It would be difficult to describe such a realm, for it can only come to you through living revelation in the Bible of your being. And yet each of us has had our glimpses of this new realm, this new place called heaven, which exists all around us now, to which we are blinded only by the many centuries of conditioning, of false pride, of vanity, the layers of mind, the world opinions, the human authorities. And through all of this, through our deepest human impulse to resist that which stands before us, we finally come to the great moment of silence which says, Father, only you are there. Only you. There can be no evil in God. And God is always there, and therefore, in that moment of peace, in that great stillness when the soul is free to function without the interference of the mind, the divine images pour forth, and we see that heaven is a present reality. Someone once called it the new golden continent. Revelation calls it the new heaven, the new earth. There is going to be a moment in world history when everyone is going to be touched at the same time, when all will feel that silent impulse at different levels. And the world of the human mind will stand still. There will be a new consciousness formed before your very eyes. A consciousness that cannot outpicture the appearance of evil. A consciousness that knows nothing about hate or animosity or death or war. That resurrection is not the resurrection of one individual. It is the resurrection of the earth itself. We each play a part in that resurrection. Through our individual resurrection from the belief in evil. The Christ that is risen in us, as the new Christ consciousness of our being, forms its circle of light with those throughout the universe who feel this same impulse. We join invisible hands. We reach across the universe as one invisible light. And the new consciousness becomes the new earth, the golden continent, the place where His will is done. We have the power within us to do now that which was in the consciousness of Jesus when these words were uttered. Give Him your coat, your cloak, your house, your car, all your possessions. Because in the new golden continent, there are no physical things. That is the revelation of Resist Not. There are no physical things here now. There is a void. And yet in the void is a fullness. And in that fullness is infinity itself, being itself, every moment of every day. There is no place that you can find now on the globe, in the sky, in the oceans, where infinity is not being infinite everywhere. Every moment that you reach out to resist any evil of any kind, you are rejecting the reality of your own self. When you reject the evil confidently, trusting totally in the presence of Christ, you are accepting yourself. And so in the rejection of evil as non-existent, non-substantial, nothing but image and thought, never externalized, never getting outside of mind, you have caught the great liberating principle. That the self is infinitely active everywhere and needs no help whatsoever. God needs no help. Spirit needs no help. Spirit is functioning throughout this universe now. And as we drop our beliefs in the reality of matter, living not by matter alone, not by bread alone, but as a living Bible, listening for the words of revelation within, we find that the living truth does come, exploding the myth that there is one human authority on the earth. For the new truth brings with it the power of its own self-expression. It brings with it the glory of His will. And it reveals the golden continent where you are. It reveals a new earth and a new heaven. It reveals that never has there been a need on this earth to resist a single evil, for never has there been one. We have been looking at the cosmic myth. And in the acceptance of it, we have lived divided from ourselves. When we are told that underneath are the everlasting arms, we are being told that the fullness of infinity, with all of the glory of God, with all the power of God, with all the wisdom and intelligence of God, is the only omnipresent truth. Underneath, meaning in the invisible, infinity is being itself. Now you know that God is not physical. You know that God is not material. You know that God is not visible. And yet you know too that God is all. And therefore you cannot expect to see, touch, feel, anything that is of God. But you can see and touch and feel the evils of this world. So you cannot trust your own sense mind. It will always resist evil. It will always deny evil. It will always affirm something else is true. It will always be busy, engaged, reactive. But you must learn to see not what the eye sees, but the reality behind the evil. You must learn to agree with thine adversary. When you know that the reality behind evil is spirit, you are agreeing with your adversary. If spirit is the reality there, beyond the visible adversary, in that understanding, you know that the adversary must be unreality. If spirit is the reality behind the evil, then the evil must be unreal. We are being told not to resist the unreal. We are being told to sit through a postal strike with the knowledge that it is unreal. There is no discord in your Father's house. There is no discord in spirit. There is no discord in your being. There is no discord in your spiritual self. You are fed not from without, you are fed from within. When Jesus stood before the guests at the wedding, and to their startled eyes there was wine where only water had been, we have all accepted that by now as his statement that there must be a transformation in our lives, as from water to wine. When do you expect that transformation to be? Why not right now? Why not see it as a transformation in consciousness in which you recognize that although the world has accepted themselves as human, as mortal, they are not. Just as when we see water, we never think of it as wine. The transformation is the realization that I am not water. I am the wine now. I am not mortal. I am the immortal now. Now I must find and accept the depth of my being. Now I must accept the highest self that I am. It isn't a 20-year journey. It's the acceptance where I stand now. And because I accept myself to be the higher self, the Spirit, the Christ, can I resist any evil on the earth? Do you see then that the rejection of the evil is the acceptance of Christ as the Spirit of your being? But the resistance to the evil is the denial of yourself as the Spirit called Christ. That is why we cannot accept evil. In the acceptance of it, we are denying our Christhood. In the belief in a lack, a limitation, a disease, a blindness, or a deafness, you are living in the false identity. And in that false identity, you will resist evil. You will find the need to, because your sense mind will know no other way. But drop all belief in evil as you accept Christ's identity. And then you find that everything in the Sermon on the Mount which says, judge not, condemn not, think not, resist not, is all telling you who you are. You are that one who need not judge, need not condemn, need not think, need not resist, because the living Spirit of God is your substance. And in that acceptance, you are lifted to the realm where the law of that substance, spiritual law, is revealed as the only law of your being and the only power. Do you see how the path to freedom is based upon identity? And these words in the Bible are forcing us to recognize that every time we are not acting in our true identity, we are seeing a world that needs to be improved, healed, manipulated, feared, hated, or loved. We're still walking in the world of false beliefs as long as there is a single person, place, thing or condition on this earth toward which we must have any defense. And because we still linger in those remnants of defense, we have not put up our sword. Jesus wasn't one to teach without demonstrating. He taught that we would die by the sword that we do not put up. And you could translate that this way. The material beliefs that you do not put up set in motion the cause of karmic law. As long as there's a belief in the reality of matter, then you must follow through and be subject to the material disease, the material discord, the material body suffering, the material limitation, the material lack. But pull out the belief in matter, and where is material disease? Where is material lack? Where is material anything if there is no matter? Where's a material hurricane? Only in the belief in matter. And who believes in matter? He who is not the Spirit of God. So we learn to fast. We take our Sabbath from the senses. We live in the silence of the sense mind, where the non-reactive senses, silenced by by our desire to live in the Spirit, cannot walk forth to fight the evil, to destroy the evil, to defend against the evil, and I rest in Him.